Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Bombercast for 2024 post gather round edition. My name is The Grizz, and I'm here with my regular co-host, Bonta34. Bonts, I suppose it was a football match that was played. I don't know how much we participated as a team, but obviously not the result we're looking at for gather round last weekend.
Somebody actually posted on the board today that we should be fresh against the Bulldogs because we were coming off a 13-day break. And I actually had to stop for a minute to think about it. And then when I realised what they were getting at, I actually quite enjoyed that one because I think after quarter time, it was very much like we didn't turn up.
Yeah. It's all a good first quarter. We've accomplished the mission. And they played like that after quarter time. It was a weird game in that sense. Like that first quarter, I thought, oh, we're on here. We can kick a bit straighter because they kick five goals straight. We kick 3-3. I thought, oh, we're in with a shot here. And we sort of just didn't make a whimper after quarter time. I think it's telling that we had almost 20 more disposals than they did, yet they beat us by 69 points and by 14 scoring shots. So they were brutally efficient. I think the game, we'll talk about the midfield in a minute, but I suppose the biggest difference, I think, is sort of the centre clearances was 19-6 and their efficiency inside 50 was 47.6%, which is basically they're scoring once one out of two times they go inside forward 50, which was a sign of how little pressure our midfield put them under.
Yeah, and I think the disappointing thing for me is that the second quarter, we actually nearly hit the front very early in it, and we probably weren't out of the game until we conceded three goals in like the last 5 minutes. So really, for a quarter and almost two quarters, we had a chance, and then they kicked those three goals, and you thought, well, after halftime, we'll come out firing. And they, again, just didn't turn up. So, unfortunately, I think it's the loss that a few of us have probably seen coming. I think the inaccuracy of our first three opponents flattered us a little bit. So, yeah, it probably wasn't that surprising that once the team actually started to kick straight, they got hold of us and really took us to the cleaners.
Yeah, so we can talk about that. Port Adelaide, we discussed at the end of last week's pod that Port Adelaide's midfield are probably the most aggressive and most damaging sort of midfield in the competition from clearance. And you saw that Rosie specifically, the amount of broken tackles he had out of congestion, Zach Butters, Jason Lord-Francis, they were getting at the front of stoppage so often that it was sort of hard for their forwards not to get on the end of it. I think Ben Mackay did extreme well. I don't think Charlie Dixon kicked a goal, which is sort of incredible when you consider the amount of ball that was going in there. So in that regards, well done to Ben Mackay. Otherwise, it was pretty dour for defenders. I know we can go through individuals and clip individuals. I really struggle to criticise, at least on the defensive aspect of it, any of our defenders, just with the quality of the ball coming in. It was brutal, and it was sort of hard for them not to kick accurately, to your point, because they were just getting such quality entries the whole time. And I don't know, the loss we had to have or that we saw coming, it's what I don't want to ramble too much about statistics. So I talked last week about how we were statistically the best clearance team in the competition. So we were plus 26 in total clearances and plus 16 in the bounce, both the number one in the league going into last week. Well, they absolutely pantsed us in centre clearances 19-6, and they were taking full toll from that, and the clearances they won as well. So we just had no answers from that aspect of the gap from the ground. And when Rosie and Horne-Francis and Butters are coming out the front of stoppage, I don't know where our sweepers went. I don't know where our defensive integrity at the clearances went. But, our midfield had a pretty rotten day all around. I don't think there's any winners you can take from that part of the ground from our team.
Yeah, Port really found one in that Horne-Francis kid. I can't believe North let him go. That was silly by them.
Yeah, what a find, eh?
Yeah, a real diamond in the rough. But I will say, I do agree with your point about it's hard to pick on anyone defensively. So I know Laverde has copped a bit of heat this week because he has pretty average moments, but it's hard being a defender when the ball's coming in constantly. And that's what we found on Friday night, was the ball was just constantly pumping in. So it is difficult to pop the defenders at all. The midfielders are a little bit different. They struggled immensely. A lot has been made of well, we were missing Durham, and don't get me wrong, I was big on him in the pod earlier this year and most improved player, but you know, if he's the missing link, then we are probably in a bit more strife than we realise. Setterfield also seemed to be underdone. I mean, they say he got a knock on that knee, which is why now he's going to miss 2 to 3 weeks moving forward, which I think we'll touch on later. But, you know, you do have to question, was it a knock or was he underdone, and how silly was it to play him? And I actually, the one person again I thought was doing really well was Archie Perkins. I thought Archie Perkins was again playing a decent role in the midfield, but then obviously he's now done a hamstring and we'll see him for a few weeks. So, yeah, it was tough. But I think the shining light for me, Grizz, taking out of the game was probably Harry Jones. I thought he backed up really well considering how poor the entries were for us. I thought he backed his performance up from the week before really well.
Yeah, I think in previous years you could argue that Harry did a lot of aimless running. Like, he covered a lot of kilometres, but it didn't really amount to anything. But the last couple weeks, obviously had a great game against St Kilda last week, but even on Friday night, he just kept presenting and he was constantly in contest. And the one thing that I really appreciated about Harry, which I think has been another knock on him in previous years, is he wasn't getting outmarked by his defender, which is really important. He was still creating a contest if he wasn't marking himself. There weren't many forwards, particularly our taller forwards and our resting ruckman, if we want to go specific players later, who can say that. And he just kept presenting. He was busting a gut all game, getting in dangerous positions, providing an outlet. It's really encouraging to see of him, especially Peter Wright out. If we want to just swing back to slight negatives or even just negatives in terms of players, I don't know what we're doing with the two ruck system, because they both got absolutely pants by Soldo to begin with, but neither of them really gave us anything forward either. And Draper was copying a fair bit of flack in the game day thread, and I think it was deserved. Some of the I'm normally a pretty big defender, Sammy, but if there's one thing I can't stomach, it's players who soccer off the ground when they can pick it up. And he has this awful habit of trying to sink his foot through it like a free kick at Tottenham Stadium, when he really should just pick the ball up. And a couple of occasions to really cost us. And even just, it seems like he's always trying to make the miracle play. There was one centre clearance where we kicked the goal. I think Archie kicked the goal. We got the centre clearance, just running out the front. Instead of just sinking a slipper into it and just pumping it 50 metres deep into the forward line and getting another entry that we can lock down, he took a look back and then tried to outrun a midfielder, then got caught, shanked the kick, Port went to the other end and kicked a goal. It was just sort of this absolute momentum killer. And I just feel like he's either going to be the solo ruck, but he's not good enough. I think Goldstein's a better ruck than him at the moment. He's not giving us enough forward. Is it time to give Brian a turn, or is it time to just ruck 80% Goldstein and hope Jones or someone else can give us a chop out for 20 minutes and try to go more mobile up forward? It's just, I was really disappointed in both Goldstein and Draper on the weekend that they got so comprehensively beaten by one guy in Soldo.
So I actually don't think Goldstein got comprehensively beaten. I thought Goldstein probably didn't lower his colours too much, to be honest. He got beaten, but I mean, he's also 500 years old, so he's going to have those moments. Sure. So and the other thing, I suppose, I'd say in defence of Goldstein, and to a lesser extent Draper, is I actually rate Soldo. I think he just got stuck behind Nankervis. I think Richmond had two good ruckmen and just couldn't fit them both in the side, and I think now he'll be very handy for Port Adelaide. But you're right, Drapes did struggle, and I think I was pretty critical of him on Friday night. That one you're talking about, it was funny to me because I agree that he should have stuck the slipper in it. I think he panicked, though. I think he thought he was under more pressure than he was. And then by looking back to see that pressure, by the time he turned back around, he put himself under pressure. It was a very strange moment. But when you're having eight disposals and only two of them are effective, and as you said, you're getting pantsed around the ground by the opposition ruckman, you are starting to struggle. And I don't think playing Todd Goldstein by himself is the answer. I get that he's probably the best of the three ruckmen, but I think it's a short-term sugar hit to play Goldstein by himself. So if Draper's not playing, I would absolutely be playing Nick Bryan. But, you know, again, it's tough because is he going to be an improvement on Draper? Probably not. So you're sort of stuck playing a ruckman alongside Goldstein, who's not quite there, I think, because Todd is not able to go forward and be an 80% forward, 20% ruck type thing. So it's pretty difficult at the moment, I think, with that ruck balance, which I think everybody knew bringing Goldstein in was going to be tricky. And at the moment, it doesn't appear like they've worked out the trick, but, you know, we'll see how that unfolds. We're only four games into his Essendon career, I guess.
Yeah, I just – my issue with Drake – not my issue. I've got to be very careful how I phrase these things. Not that they probably care what I think, but he's not a kid anymore, Sammy Draper. That's the thing for me. Like, he's drafted in 2016. He's 26 turning 27. Like, if he's not able to ruck 80% of the game now, and and the whole – the funny, clumsy ruckman thing that's still developing his craft. I'm sorry, he's 26, 20, 27, or 25, 20, 26. He sort of is what he is at this point, isn't he? Like, I know ruckmen take a while, but they don't take until they're 26. I think he's basically the same age as Soldo. So if we're at a point now, I know he's had injuries, but that ACL was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago now. If he's still at a point where he can't run out the game as a majority ruck, you know, is his ceiling, like, his flash plays are great, but is he consistent enough? And even if Brian isn't a massive upgrade on Draper at this point, he is significantly younger. And so are you just trading off for the future? I don't know. That's probably a future problem. I just want to touch on the midfield.
I do think you're right about Draper, though, and it's something I've said before, and I've been held down before, is that unfortunately he's not going to be the best ruckman in the league. So you're going to get these flashes from him, and I think especially posters on our board have got focused on the flashiness and the goal of the year and the clumsy highlights, and the reality is that doesn't win you flags. So whilst it's good to have a player like him, if you're going to be a big clumsy ruckman, you've got to be a Shane Mumford, who was a dominant clumsy ruckman, not a turns up when he wants to clumsy ruckman like Draper currently is.
Yeah, I suppose this is maybe a thought for the end of the year, but I'm sort of wondering now, if you have to lose one of Draper or Brian every year before this year, I said we'll lose Brian and keep Draper. I may have swapped that in my head now.
It depends on how Nick comes into the AFL and whether he gets a chance,
I just think that around the ground now, you have to provide something as a ruckman. You think about all the good teams, they get around the ground stuff from their ruckman, and that's including last year, you know, Mason Cox and Darcy Cameron, you know, give you something forward and give you a little bit around the ground. And you think about Max Gawn for Melbourne, and you think about Blitz Savs and Reece Stanley for Geelong. Reece Stanley basically plays as a pseudo centre half back off the ball and allows Blitz Savs to run around in the midfield. You've got to get something around the ground. I just think Brian's more likely to do that. But that, again, future problems, future topics in different podcasts. Just on the midfield, no winners there. I do think Xavier Duursma showed a bit on the wing. He tried hard all game. I think he is a real good pickup. And I thought Jay Gresham kicked 3 goals, which is a good effort, considering the lack of supply going down there for basically after quarter time.
Yeah, I still think our comments in previous weeks about Zach Merritt hold true. I think he's a victim of his own brilliance, because, you know, he had 700-odd metres gained and 36 touches and had a shot and laid 5 tackles and did all the hard stuff that you expect from your captain. So I think he was okay. I just don't think anyone else came along for the journey. You know,
just on Merritt, some of his defensive efforts late were bad, and he had some horrific turnovers. Well, look, turnovers happen, but I thought generally defensively, particularly clearance, all of our midfielders were pretty soundly beaten.
Yeah, I guess I just look at it and go, well, Zach probably got sick of being the only one doing anything for the first 3 quarters by the time the last quarter rolled around with his defensive efforts.
yep, fair.
The problem is, so you look at the midfield, right, and you go, well, drop someone. But who do you drop right now? Because, I mean, Darcy was average on Friday, and I actually thought his first quarter and a half was good for his defensive efforts. I thought he was running well again, and then he just fell away, disappeared. Knocking Darcy Parrish for his defensive efforts has become a little bit of a meme on our board, I think it's safe to say, so I won't harp too long on that. The other player I want to talk about is Ben Hobbs. So Ben Hobbs, I thought, was pretty average on Friday night, unfortunately. He still laid seven tackles. So he still did the, I thought he was good defensively. My problem with Ben Hobbs at the moment is he goes to ground far too easily.
Oh,
as soon as he feels a touch from any player, his first thought is not where's the ball. His first thought is where's the umpire. He seems to me to be just playing for free kicks that aren't there. And I just wish he'd keep it. Like, there was one stage there, I think he was running back towards the goal and the ball was in front of him and he had a player behind him. And they sort of touched him, didn't really touch him. He sort of touched the ball and he just fell on his stomach and put his arms out to the umpire. And I was like, now, if you just actually grabbed the ball and kicked it instead of looking at the umpire, you probably would have got the goal. It just, stuff like that just infuriates me.
You read my mind. So my thought on Ben is that he probably gets caught holding the ball whilst diving on the footy more than any player I can think of in the last 12 months. Because you're right, in a contest, he goes to the ball and then he feels contact, he goes to the ground, and the opposition player's just like, great, I'll trap the ball under you, and it's holding the ball because he dived on it. And he did that again a couple of times. Look, I personally think he's out of place as a half forward, which is where they've got him playing. Now we've got some mids missing. I'd love to see him thrown in there as a pure inside mid and, yeah, give him that rocket that you just said of don't worry about the free kick because we need to do him in the footy. I had a couple of really poor disposals, but, yeah, he's not Robinson Crusoe there. There are a lot of people who are missing targets all over the place on the weekend and, yeah, not a great look. I try not to pick on the real young guys in a game like that. I always go to the top end of the list. What did you do for us? You know, Merritt, McGrath, Redmond, Parrish, these sorts of guys, and really outside of Merritt in the first three quarters, no one really did much. So, but yeah, I think Ben Hobbs had a poor game. I thought Nick Hind was not, didn't even give us much coming on as a sub. But when you're down by 50 points, you come on as a sub. What can you do? Jai Menzi was subbed off at three-quarter time. I think it might be worth looking at his spot just to get some speed or something in there. Yeah, just a dirty night overall. Did you have any thoughts before we sort of move on to the next topic?
Yeah, I just want to touch on Hind. I just don't get why he played. I get the idea that, you know, you want a sub that can come and give you something, but I just don't understand why someone like Alwyn Davey Jr. couldn't have played because there was no VFL game. So this whole, I will give him a full game in the VFL, didn't apply on Friday night. It just baffles me that we played Hind. Yeah, but don't understand it. Joey Menzies, agree. I think we talked about him earlier in the year, and you know, I raised the point that he was second or third leading goal kicker last year, and that was why people were arguing he needed to stay. But that sort of fell apart if you looked at goals per game, where he dropped down to like fifth or sixth. So yeah, both of them I think should be on notice, but it's just a matter of how many kids can you play, I guess.
Yeah, and who's knocking on the door at VFL? It doesn't sound like there's too many guys doing that, although they didn't play last weekend. So we'll move to the injury list. So it's unfortunately a pretty heavy one at the moment. We don't have the benefit of a fully healthy list, and I think particularly in our midfield at the moment, we're missing a few players. So from the weekend, you intimated before that Archie Perkins has done a hamstring. This is yet another hamstring and another soft tissue injury to start the year and probably something we want to be keeping an eye out. So we've got Mad Curlvey with the calf, Zach Reid with the hamstring, Archie Perkins, hamstring, Jordan Ridley, a quad, and obviously Sammy Draper did a hamstring or a calf, I can't remember quite what it was, over the season. Dylan Shields just coming back from a soft tissue injury. Something to watch there, I think. I know all teams have injuries, but it seems like we're getting a clump of them now. But Will Sederford's going to miss for 2 to 3 weeks. Archie Perkins is 3 to 4. Jordan Ridley had a re-aggravation of that quad, which is really worrying. The 4 to 6. Do you think we're hitting a critical mass in terms of these injuries?
So it's funny because we get Tex and Shield back this week, so we take two off and we add two on. I actually did the math earlier today, and it was based on last week's figures. So it's obviously not the most up-to-date because the AFL is very slow in updating their injury lists, unfortunately. But the league average for injury list is 8 players. We had 9 going into Friday night. So while it does feel like we've got clump and we're getting hit hard, we're actually not getting hit that much harder than on average than every other club. Like, you got your outliers. I think Geelong's only got like 4 or 5 on their list, and you know, there's other clubs that have got 16 on their list type thing. So yeah, it does feel like we're hitting hard, because I think most of ours could probably make a case for best 22 or borderline. But reality is, compared to the rest of the league, we aren't that far off. So yeah, I agree that it's concerning that with these soft tissues. I just don't think I just think sometimes we get a little bit lost in our Essendon bubble, if that makes sense, when we look at injuries. Because we look at our own and go, yeah, we're missing players. It's sort of similar to what the St Kilda fans were doing at the end of their game against us last week, when they listed six or seven blokes that were out. And I was like, well, we could do the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of move out of your bubble. So I think sometimes as footy fans that just happens a little bit.
Will Setterfield and Archie Perkins is a worry, considering they're probably our two biggest midfielders. And considering who we play this week, that's probably a significant issue. Sammy Durham, ahead.
It's especially important for my super coach, because Setterfield is in my dynasty team, which I play against a number of other posters on our board. And unfortunately, I don't have anyone to replace him, so I'm in a bit of strife.
Well, I don't think we have anyone to replace him in real life either. So it's all downhill from here. But Sammy Durham is returning from that concussion, hopefully, which is good. As you said, Dylan Shiel and Tex Wanganeen will be returning, albeit via the AFL this week, which sort of probably, or not that sort of, does turn us, I suppose, to this week's game. It's the Western Bulldogs, who are fresh off a nail biter against Geelong. They're on the wrong end of that one, but they seem to be getting their mojo back, especially their midfield got going, which has always been a strength of theirs and always been a reason why we tend to struggle against them. What do you do this week at selection? So I have this theory that if Hind is going to play, he's got to play a full game, and we've got to move him into the back line and Martin into the midfield, because we need more damage from our midfield outside of Zach Merritt. And I just can't think of anyone else who can go in there in Archie's absence. Yeah, Sammy Durham will come back, but we're losing Perkins and Setterfield. Do you throw Martin and Durham and give Ben Hobbs more minutes through there? I think that's what I would do. What would you do?
Yeah, well, I don't like Martin back, so I'd be happy for him to move forward. I don't think anyone outside of the Essendon Football Club likes Martin back at the moment. So you're probably right. I'd be looking to move Martin. I had a discussion with Milanister on a Discord earlier, and he was talking about, well, you could drop a Nick Hind and a Mason Redmond, because I thought Redmond was also poor. Sort of try and send a message that way, or even a Laverde instead of Hind, and bring in, you know, Roberts and Young and a couple of these blokes to the VFL, which I don't think is a bad idea. I think we need to do something. But yeah, it's a bit frustrating, because we can't necessarily fit Hobbs into the midfield when everyone's fit and firing. But I don't know if I want to put him in there alongside Zach and Darcy. If those three are our starting midfield, we're very, very small.
Well, we are, and I don't think Hobbs would be starting midfield. I think he would be a rotation. Look, I think Durham, Merritt and Parrish are probably three starting mids. I think Durham's not huge, but he's probably the biggest of that lot. Maybe Caldwell, Hobbs and Martin rotating through there to give them a bit of slack. But it's a test, because we're coming up against the Western Bulldogs midfield, which is just loaded. When you think about Bontempelli, you think about McRae, Liberatore, these sorts of players. You know, Port have, I think, one of the deepest and most damaging midfields in the competition. When you think that Ollie Wines and Willem Drew and Travis Boker are midfielders 4, 5, and 6, they'd probably be, what, 2, 3, 4 in our midfield at the moment. You know, 3, 4, 5, if depending on how highly you rate Parrish. So we're running up against, I think, a pretty similar issue in the Bulldogs, where their midfield, when they get going, they have a history of absolutely dominating us. And I just wonder if, particularly with a couple guys down, all three or four, you know, Setterfield and Perkins and Shields obviously been out the whole year, whether we're going to struggle to match them through the guts.
Yeah, I think we will struggle absolutely against them through the midfield. It's interesting, because my most fascinating thought for the Bulldogs at the moment is, how do we get our hands on Jack McRae for a couple of years? Because he just can't seem to get a game, and the Bulldogs need slot straight in as a starting mid for us, no doubt, I reckon, and could potentially be that experienced head we're looking for. But yeah, Bontempelli alone just gives me nightmares because he's, to me, the most talented player in the league right now.
Yep.
I know there's some Collingwood fans out there who have probably just had their anti-Nick Daicos alarms fire up, but I think Bont's the best player in the league, and he's just going to towel us up, I think, on Friday night. I don't know. I've never seen anyone in our side be able to run with him, and I don't think that's going to change. Maybe Sammy Darren, but geez, that's rough, isn't it? Come back from a concussion and off you go to tag Bontempelli.
I don't think you can tag Bontempelli, though. That's what makes him so brilliant, is that you throw a player on him, he's just so big, he shakes a tag in the contest, or he just takes him down to full forward. And you're like, oh, crap, now we've got Sammy Darren playing fullback against Marcus Bontempelli, which is horrific. But when you look at the depth of their midfield, right, you go to Liberatore, Bontempelli, and Treloar. Then you got Riley Sanders, who has started like a house on fire his AFL career. Riley West rotates through their half forward flank. You know, Tim English might be the best ruckman in the competition. Jack McRae played on the weekend, but I think as a sub. So he'll be in there again. I think it's going to be fascinating. I think their forward line as well. Norton's only been targeted, I think, like 10 times the entire year in their forward line, which seems a bit crazy when you think about how good he is. But that's targets inside forward 50 as opposed to around the ground. They've got Darcy and Jamari Uhagan sort of playing deep forward or key forward for them at the moment. It'll be a huge test for Cox and for Mackay, I think, to match up on those guys, considering they're probably both more mobile, which Mackay might struggle with. But our key to the game here, I think, just has to be we have to match them in the contest. Even if it's not just on pure clearance and disposal numbers, we have to have pressure on the ball. Because if there's one thing the Western Bulldogs like to do when they're losing, it's get a lot of the footy and just sort of pump it forward, Melbourne style. If we can get into an aerial ping pong sort of intercept game, we might be half a chance. But if we don't put any pressure on the ball and they just vault it through the middle of the ground like Port Adelaide did on the weekend, it's going to be a long night.
Yeah, I think you're right about the forward line. I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of the Dogs this year, and nobody's tagged me about Jamara lately, so I don't think he's set the world on fire this year, but we're probably the kind of side, I think, at the moment that he'll kick a bag against, and I'll get tagged 400 times at some point.
I think he hasn't been tagged because he's about to sign a contract extension, so everyone's given up on trying to trade for him, which was a fanciful idea to begin with, but regardless.
There's a couple of posters on their board and they know who they are and they're probably listening and they do tag me every time he has a good game, which I have pointed out does certainly seem to happen every 3 or 4 weeks, which was my entire point about him originally. It wasn't that he was never going to be any good. It was just at the time the hype didn't live up to what was actually being put on the field. So that's what I've sort of been a bit facetious because they haven't. Looking at his stats now, he actually really hasn't dominated that much this year, but he hasn't been bad. I think Norton, you know, there's talk about Norton should go to centre half back. I think that's just madness because you can find a players to go down back, but you can't get a forward who can mark and kick goals like he can. So, yeah, their forward line's definitely going to be a big stretch. I actually would be very excited to see how Nick Cox goes on Jamara because I think he's probably he's definitely the most mobile down there, and I think it'd just be a great challenge for Cox against someone who's not that bulky. Jamara doesn't really wrestle. He does like to get on his bike and get out in front. And he's a little bit like Harry Jones, I guess, in that regard. So it'd be fascinating for me to see how Cox goes against someone like him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Cox is, again, I'm marking Cox on a curve because what he had to put up with defensively in terms of the ball coming in last weekend, I don't know how you could get an accurate gauge on how he's going, but I thought he played pretty well against St Kilda, so good test. So this is a Friday night game. So again, we're on Friday night lights. There's nowhere to hide if the players don't bring the Essendon edge, which I suppose was a two-week affair, wasn't it? the old Essendon edge.
Yep. You do have to wonder what the AFL were thinking when they scheduled this game. I mean, honestly, I could have told them that Essendon versus Bulldogs on a Friday night was going to be an absolute snooze fest.
Yeah, well, historically it has been. So I think we got one win in 2021 where Peter Wright kicked 7 goals or something ridiculous, but in the last 3 games they've beaten us by, I think it was 50 points, 30 points, and then 40 points. So they haven't really been close affairs, and they had the wood on us pretty strongly before that as well. Their strengths match up really well with our weaknesses for them. So I'm personally leaning towards the Bulldogs. I think expected changes, losing Satterfield and Perkins, will probably gain Hind as a full-time, as a full-game player. We'll bring back Durham, and we might bring in one of the Davey boys to play sub. I wonder if we take out Menzie. So Menzie got subbed at three-quarter time, which is very rare for a small forward. So it'll be interesting to see if he holds his spot or whether we do try bringing a couple of young players. Again, I would love to see Martin move up into that half-forward midfield, and then maybe you bring in Archie Roberts or you move behind into defence. But I'm probably tipping the Bulldogs by 5 goals here. I tipped Port Adelaide by 3, and I was only, 50 points shy on the weekend, so not great, but think it's probably the Dogs by about 5 goals.
Yeah, I don't see us winning the game. I suppose for me it comes down to be the Dogs by whether or not they turn up for 3 quarters or 2 quarters or 1 quarter. It just depends. And if it's probably under 5 goals, the margin probably flatters where we are at the moment, I guess, which is a bit frustrating, but it is to be expected with the way we are. We do only have our coach in his second year, so we are still needing to give him time, although I do echo the sentiments of most of our fan base at the moment that I'm sort of a little bit sick of being told to wait because it's been 20-odd years. So, it'll be tough on Friday night. It'll be a hard slog and, just amazing fixturing from the AFL. Maybe they like to see us get thumped under lights. I don't know.
When Brad Scott said it was going to be an 8-year project, I think a lot of Essendon fans went up in arms. But you don't want to overreact to one really bad loss. And the Sydney loss was not great, but I didn't think it was as bad as what the media said it was at the time. But you can't have too many of those like you did against Port Adelaide, particularly in prime time, without copping your whack. And I keep on hearing about this Essendon edge, but you can't fake aggressiveness. And, the old, is it Mike Tysonism? Everyone's got to play until you get punched in the face. Like, everyone's tough until they get hit back. What do you do? And we just didn't have an answer. So I'm looking for a response this week, hopefully. But otherwise, I don't think that's I think that's all we've got to chat about right now. So that will wrap us up for this week. Thanks for joining me, Bonds.
No, thanks, mate. And you're right. It is. We can't judge on the past. We will wait for a response. I guess we're just all sick of having the loss we needed to have, so to speak. We just shouldn't need to have these losses to spark us. But let's see what happens on Friday night, and hopefully they prove us wrong and get a win.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. As always, please remember to like, subscribe, and tell your Essendon supporting mates. And hopefully we have a better result this week. Go Bombers.